We can jump right into the exercise. And like John Bennett was saying, really what we want to do is think a little bit about what's important to us about this place, and when we're thinking about the future of the airport, what values come to mind. And so this is where the little sticky pads that we have are going to come into play, just so we can think a little bit about really what matters most to us. So you'll have more than three, but take your top three values, write them on separate pieces of paper, and then come up and stick them on the wall here behind me. And then after we get all of our values up on the wall, what we're going to do is just go around the horn and talk about what we put up there and see where there's themes, where there's a lot of commonalities, and where there's a lot of differences in individual values. And we know that not all values are created equal, and that we all prioritize different things, and so that's okay. One thing I would recommend is values aren't really solutions for what the future airport is going to be. It's really what those principles are that's going to inform our thinking about those future solutions. So we'll do this values conversation, talk about what's most important, and be thinking in the back of your mind. Our next exercise, if you look down at the bottom corner of page 2 here, is describing your vision for the airport 30 years from now. So the spoiler alert is going to be, after we talk about values, we're going to see how those values translate into the ultimate vision for the airport, so we can have that sort of cohesive conversation. Yeah, Evan.
This is actually the second time I've noticed it.
Yeah,
30
yep,
years.
Absolutely.
Why 30 years? Do we really, why not 10 years or 8 years?
Right. That's a very...
I'm going to be 92 in 30 years. I probably won't even be
but
living in the state.
Your grandkids won't.
So, but seriously.
Yeah.
It's,
I think a good point.
And I'm not that farsighted.
30 years has been the number that's, you know, sort of become the embodiment for the project of
the airport should last 45 to 50 years.
Right. Right.
You know.
Yeah, and I think for the purposes of our discussion tonight, be thinking about it, you know, in the future, what we'd like to see there and what we'd like to see there for our future generation. So 30 years, 50 years, and not losing sight of the conversation that we had with this group in March when we had the guy from FAA, that there are some issues out there now that we talked about that the airport's working to address. So there's going to be some short-term fixes while we look at what the vision is going to be, and there's some of those things that are just happening today. But really, for the ASE vision process, looking out, whether it's 10, 30, 50 years into the future, whatever time frame feels right to you in terms of when that vision should be accommodated, and knowing that we want to keep flexibility in our vision, so whatever we're designing needs to accommodate not only what's happening today, but what's going to be, you know, potentially out there in the future as well. So being visionary, that was a long way of saying we should just put on our creative hats and you know, if you had a magic wand, what would that vision look like?
Well, what is the time frame for things to actually happen? Is it 5 years that this would be done, or is that known or not known?
That's a really good question, Rich. I'm going to probably ask.
Yeah, actually, we've been talking about that. We're thinking a 5 to 7 year time frame. By the time we get through this.
If we hope this can be completed and usable as a finished product.
Yeah, 5 to 7 years is kind of what we're looking at.
And Rich, is what the process would likely be is the vision would then go into design, and then design has, you know, conceptual to detailed to final design that would then need to be constructed. So that's sort of the milestones within that 5 to 7 years. Is that safe to say?
So Miles, you're going to have us give our 1 minute spiels on what we think the three most important community values are.
We
vision doing this yellow sticker thing.
We are. Yep. We're going to write down our three most important values, put them up on the wall so we can just think about them a little bit. We'll group them together, and then we're going to go around, and we really want to hear in your own words what's most important to you.
Cool.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay, thanks. So, everybody good? Any questions?
Just a reminder, remember, they go one value per sheet, because the idea, and that's when the dots come in, we're going to kind of group them and then do a little dot exercise, and everybody will get three dots. And the way that will work is that you can go up and kind of look at the groupings, and you can put a dot on those that are your highest priority. You can put all three dots in one area. You can kind of, so that gives an idea of kind of where that grouping falls out.
Miles, values is kind of an open-ended word, or kind of, I think it means different things to different people. Can you give us just like, throw out a couple of examples of what you're looking for?
Absolutely.
As far as,
and I would say, too, that values are not created equal for everyone. And the examples that we heard in the other room, too, it could be environmental sustainability, things like economic vitality, authenticity to the uniqueness of Aspen, things of that nature that are more values-based rather than solutions-oriented. If that does that help to,
yeah,
to clarify?
Yeah, because they're two different things, solutions.
Right, exactly. It's a very good question. Thank you. Any other questions before we get ready? I think some of us are already there.
Quick question. So yeah. It doesn't need to be a word. It
could be a short thought, exactly. And we'll elaborate on these short thoughts once we get them up on the wall. Right up here behind me.
And you only put one on each.
One per sheet. Yeah, one per sheet. As Rich was saying, we'll do one value per sheet, get them on the wall. We're going to talk about values and then vision. And then the fun final exercise is going to be with sticky dots, we're going to prioritize. Easier to get the wall. Yeah,
watch
thanks,
out.
Rich.
No tripping.
But by the way, all these meetings, as you know, are recorded. That's why that thing is sticking in the middle of the room here.
And the reason being for that is for folks who can't be here tonight, we want to make this process as transparent and accessible for everybody. So we're putting meeting minutes up on the website. There's actually video recordings of the big lecture style meetings that we're doing, and then these audio recordings will help make sure that we capture this for folks who can't be here. So if someone wants to go back and play the tape, they can do that. So we're definitely seeing a lot of themes together, which is good. It means there's a lot of common ground here and a lot of diversity in those themes too, so it's a good mix. And there's no wrong answer with the values conversation, which is one of the best things about that. And Heather, to your point, for the vision too, we're not going to write down our visions, we're just going to speak to them, and I may have Jarrett help us
do some
scribing so we can develop some themes, but really the values will be a stepping stone to, based on these values and where we see common ground, and where we see really some individual priorities, how do we translate that, what's the stepping stone to our vision?
I need a job, Rich.
Well, and Rich, I was just going to go around and ask people to hold up three fingers and do a little sticky. So I think we've got a lot. We've got a lot.
I would use scissors, but that's just me. Here's your three. Well,
Lane,
he's right there, so
I'm going to
get some.
Oh, okay.
This is intriguing. Did these go on my forehead?
You can put them
anywhere
you want.
Yeah, you can put them
wherever. By whatever's most important.
Yeah. The intent was we put them at the end of the discussion near the values, but really to signify what's most important to us. But you want to put them on your forehead?
That's most important to me.
Exactly. That's the sign. Between the ears is important.
A few other parts, too.
All right. Well, I think we've got all of our values out here, and we've got some really, really great themes that are percolating up to the top here. Just going clockwise. Looking at the curfew, being respectful of existing neighborhoods, noise, managing those kind of impacts. Convenience, a lot of clustering here around convenience, ease of use, reliability, and that's very consistent with the survey that we had you all do at that meeting in February. I don't know if you recall the quick prioritization exercise. Service reliability was a big priority there as well. Efficiency, a lot of energy here around an efficient airport. Quick, easy, seamless. Looking at economic vitality, environment, and then a lot of energy here around the actual architecture design and that reflection of the character of place. So that's enough of me trying to put these into themes. And Barry, you want to go first and lead us out on what your top three values were?
This is time for my 60-second spiel, right?
Yeah, we'll try to keep it as about 60 seconds. I'm not going to be timing anybody, but don't make me be the bad guy.
He prepared remarks.
I love it. Did his homework. Did you all get the homework email? Excellent.
Okay, here
Thank
we go.
You, sir.
Ready?
Yes.
All right. Aviation safety, although of primary importance, is in my view irrelevant to our charge. Because the FAA has the exclusive right and duty to make flights into and out of Aspen, as well as elsewhere, to make them safe. And we have neither the expertise nor the authority to do so. As to core community values that should guide the future of the airport, it's my view that you cannot further community values by throttling or creating inefficiencies in transportation touch points, whether they're parking garages or the entrance to Aspen or the airport. The one community value I think should drive our deliberations is efficiency. If we want to limit growth in Aspen and elsewhere in the Upper Valley, we should do it by limiting guest beds, not by restricting or constraining the redevelopment of the airport, so that it lacks the capacity to meet future demand. End of spiel.
Perfect. I think you timed it. That was like
60 seconds.
I was impressed. Yeah.
How many words did you have to eliminate to get in under the wire?
I was pretty lucky on this one.
Very well.
203 words.
I just spoke to being respective of existing neighborhoods, so we have people from all over the place who I'm sure know flight patterns and all that kind of stuff, and where I live, I don't want to have them move the place where the plane starts at 6 a.m. in front of my house. So it's just taking the environment and the people who live there into account when they're deciding the airport and where things go. Second one is forward-thinking design, which is we're going to design it for today and tomorrow, but also 10 and 20 years down the road, what planes are being taken off the line and what, you know, what are new planes looking like, and just keeping that in mind. And just one more slash. No, it looks like it though, no. Oh, you know what it was? It was, it's not up here. Modest and make economical in size, like just not being like Eagle Airport where we left. I think it's like cavernous.
That's a fair statement.
It's cavernous, it's big, it doesn't seem like it's used, even though I wasn't there at prime time, but just economical and modest in size. It reflects Aspen. It doesn't overbuild stuff. And that's it.
Awesome. Thank you. Scott?
My main concern was to remember that we are a tourist-based community and that we need to keep that in mind. Don't forget about the economic vitality of where we live, or we won't have to worry about an airport. So that's my main concern. And then the efficiency of the it's, you know, currently not efficient. It's, you know, it's crowded and uncomfortable, and, you know, it's just, you know, but also maintain the service levels that we've been lucky to get. You travel around, you know, the other resort communities and stuff, they don't have what we have. And the convenience factor is an amazing thing, even though sometimes you do go out there and sit forever and the snowstorm rolls in, whatever, but still 90% of the time we're able to come and go. I can't remember what I'm third.
Economic vitality and efficiency and experience.
I think I got stuck.
Over the limit.
But sort of the same thing, enhance the
use of everything for convenience sake, for everyone's experience, tourists and locals alike.
Excellent. All right, Scott, very well said.
My main focus was probably efficiency. I think the best airport designs just kind of get out of the way and you arrive and get your bag and go. And so getting through the airport, not getting lost inside of it, parking easy and just making things efficient and convenient. I also thought design-wise, something that's modern and sustainable. It could be one of the larger buildings in Pitkin County, and it should be energy efficient. I think that's it.
Excellent. Nevin.
Okay.
I think timing
is now. You just took 4 or 5 seconds. I didn't grow up here like a lot of you folks. I chose Aspen, and I chose Aspen for basically sort of 3 things. One is the outdoors. It's fantastic. Two, you know, it's not necessarily the most inclusive place, except to the extent that 90% of the people have a certain political point of view. So I'd like to think of it as an open place. And the last thing is sort of an abundantly respectful view toward the environment. If you translate that into architecture, this is a very expensive building, because what you have is, you know, a building that you probably don't see from 82, because of landscaping and berm and, you know, and just sort of fitting into a natural environment. A passenger experience that architecturally is articulated by soaring ceilings and floor-to-ceiling glass and a LEED-certified platinum building. That's a pretty expensive undertaking when you get down to it. That's like a couple hundred million bucks just for the terminal facility itself. And that's 15 seconds over the limit. Actually, 12.
No, you were okay.
You're good. And self-policing always buys you a couple extras. So.
Thank you.
Andrew.
I use the airport. My family uses the airport. I use it for business. I use it for pleasure. I said efficient, convenient, and accessible or something. I have a very good friend I worked with who's in a, or I'm friends with, who's in a very sort of guest-serving business. He's like, I just as soon see the thing, all the planes go to Eagle and Rifle. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, I totally disagree. So I think I would like, I've been to Jackson Hole, that's got a sort of bigger airport than I think we need, but it's, you know, it works well, and it's like, it reflects a, you know, you arrive and you're like, all right, this place is organized, it's got it together, and I think that's. And then with my Rotary Club, we toured the back facilities where the people work, and they're like, this just isn't safe. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we need to have people working there to be safe. So that's I was like, we got to figure that out. So that's right on.
Excellent. Thank you.
Yeah, core community value. I just like to see, I run into situations in the Valley and in the community where it seems like governments have conflicting policies. I'd like to see this project come together with that in mind, to not just look at a runway and a terminal, but expand beyond that and see what the city of Aspen's doing at the time to influence what's going to go on in the terminal, what's going on down Valley, which is very becoming more and more inclusive, to see how that's going to affect what's going on in the terminal. And like was mentioned before, pretty much the runway and the planes are FAA stuff, and we just have to concern ourselves with how the terminals can operate, and beyond that it expands to environmental issues, transportation issues, what goes on in Highway 82, et cetera, et cetera.
Excellent. Thank you, President. Amos.
Yeah, I heard on convenience. One idea on that, but I mean, if it does get rebuilt and bigger, maybe a customs house or immigration. That way we're already available and ready for international flights to come directly here. And then the other end is probably environmentalism and making sure it's a net zero building, not only being built, but operating. And I know it's expensive, but I think it's worth it.
Absolutely. Great. Well, now's the time to be visionary, and then, you know, put the checkbooks aside for a second and talk about if we had a magic wand, what would we do? And so that's what values are all about. Heather?
I think mine primarily revolved around what a lot of people said about efficiency and the need to create a really positive experience for both guests and local people. And I think it would be great if us worker bee types could choose to fly out of Aspen instead of Grand Junction or Eagle, because there are enough choices and enough opportunities for different types of airlines and costs and scheduling and all that. But certainly, first and foremost, we need to make sure our guests have a positive experience. And so along with that goes the flexibility and choice of a wider range of I guess, carriers and all the different things that are up for discussion, which I think makes people worry about us being expanding and becoming too growth oriented, but it doesn't necessarily have to be that way, I think. And then just wrapped up in the whole sense that there needs to be economic vitality for the entire valley, and our airport is such a cog in that very big wheel, because it's what brings people here and allows people to leave and come back and all that. So
I see our airport as the gateway to Aspen Mountain, our four mountains, and the moment that either our guests get off the plane and our guests do supply us with our economic well-being, our jobs, etc., I think they need to as soon as they get off the plane, efficiency to get out, get their luggage, but children have been on the plane for 2-3 hours, maybe have a couple of interactive nature areas that while they're waiting for their luggage, the kids can already be learning, you know, the difference between a black bear and a grizzly, and what raccoons do when they don't sleep, and, you know, things that, that will maybe invoke some interest in nature and cultivate respect to nature while they're staying here.
Thank you. And Joe, we just missed you, so if you want to add your, we're just giving 60 seconds on how much values were.
I put up mine the airline service in continuation of airline service, because many of you may not know this, there's going to be a very drastic shortage of commercial pilots going forward, which is good for this young man going into the industry. And people like me retire in 10 years, there's going to be a drastic shortage. And the CEO of SkyWest Airlines, SkyWest flying here for American, Delta, United, said that he would only be able to operate on the continued trajectory 30% of his fleet in about 3 years from now, because of the pilot shortage. Because as all the major airline pilots retire, they're going to take them from the regional airlines and move up to the
large aircraft. Yeah.
So what can Aspen do about that? Well, it locks itself in by limiting itself to the smaller airplanes. Mm. I'm not here to say we want to fly the largest airplane in here possible. We can't fly the airplane I fly in, 757, it's too big. But there are some medium-sized airplanes that will be flown by the major airlines. So anything that is greater than 76 seats or 86,000 pounds by airline contract has to be flown by a major airline, and not by a regional. Cannot be subcontracted. So there won't be a pilot shortage at the majors.
Mm. Interesting. Mm.
Yeah. And Joe, we'll be a week from tomorrow talking about industry trends. You'll see it in the roadmap you have on the back side of your handout. As we go through, we'll be looking at May 7th for industry trends, and I don't know if that will be brought up, but please continue to raise that point. So,
yeah,
I saw a lot of head nods.
I'm sorry I had to step away, but I know safety is a concern, everybody, mine as well. You know, we don't want to see any kind of airline disasters here. But I think there's a public misconception that larger airlines, particularly flown by the airlines, are unsafe. When I think back to the airline accident here in Aspen, I think of the Mexican airplane that flipped over on the runway about 2 years ago, landed in severe tailwind. The terrible Gulfstream accident 20 years ago. I can't think of any airline accidents in the time we've been here, apart from the BA-146 about 20 years ago that slid off the end of the runway. But that
there was one up on McLean Flats, Rocky Mountain Airways, a long time ago.
Oh, yeah.
I can't name the year, but it was
only... It was a small regional.
Long time ago.
The last airline accident in the U.S. with fatalities, with the exception of the Southwest anomaly where the engine disintegrated and I think it killed one person, was 10 years ago in Buffalo, New York, Auburn, Mayor Marriott.
It was an ATR.
Yeah, as a result of that, the FAA said, okay, from now on, airline pilots can no longer start with 200 hours. We need 1,500 hours minimum to raise that. Well, that's one of the reasons why there's a pilot shortage going forward. Just there aren't that many pilots that have experience out there. So the FAA stepped in and made it much safer. Now, I'm glad the 737 MAX is grounded, and we all know about the terrible accidents between Ethiopia and Indonesia. The largest operator of the 737 MAX is Southwest, and 35 of them. Now, Southwest is losing those airplanes or crashing them. I just think that their pilot experience is much higher.
And that's a good bridge to the safety conversation, too. I think, Barry, you mentioned, and Brad, I think you mentioned that really the FAA safety is within their wheelhouse. And that's paramount to everybody and the top priority that is really not negotiable, you know, in terms of it's a value that we all share. And so it's not necessarily part of this conversation. And I think even John Bennett in our instructions for tonight from the Airport Vision Committee said, in addition to safety, which is paramount, and really, as we've heard tonight, really in the wheelhouse of the FAA, and that's something they're going to ensure and do everything they can in this airport. So I think you make that point very well, too.
I'm not coming into the industry, or it's just taking so much time to get to the point where you can
really qualify pilots. I'll answer that question. After 9/11, the airlines went into bankruptcy. So there was just not the appeal for people to get into the airline industry to spend $100,000 on pilot training to, for a $20,000 a year job when you can do something else.
So the pays
has improved now, but there's such a backlog of pilots coming into the industry, shortage.
Okay.
And the military's downsized. Mm-hmm. You know,
can I make one comment relative to that? The scope clause changes, the scope change clauses in airline pilot contracts make it very difficult for the regional airlines, which are not covered by the major pilot unions that have these scope clauses. Mm-hmm. The regional airlines, SkyWest, which is virtually all of our flights, commercial flights in here, those are not your pilots like you. You know, you have a great union contract. These people that fly the airlines that, the planes that we fly into, they have low wages, no benefits, and they're getting poached by, because of the reasons which you've already articulated, like shortage of pilots, they're getting poached by the large airlines.
That's very true.
So SkyWest could go out of business. GoJet, which just bought these sort of CRJ-700s, well, the knockoffs, these 550s, they could easily go out of business. We could wind up with no airline service in Aspen unless Aspen undertakes this project to allow smaller, narrow-body aircraft into ASC, you know, which means that you're definitely looking at, you know, the A220s. You're definitely looking at the new Embraer 190, 195 E2s, and you're probably looking at some smaller variants of the A320s, whether like an A319, maybe even an A320, and maybe you even get some 737s. But this is definitely going to happen, or we will not have any scheduled airline service here in 10 years.
I agree. So Aspen should not limit itself to 100-foot wingspan.
No. I mean, an A320 is 117 feet.
Mm-hmm. And bringing it back to the values conversation, too, all of the reliability, convenience,
but there's an economic, the economic vitality is what we're really talking about here.
Yeah.
This is all a bunch of noise, but it leads you to the play, to the signal. Mm-hmm. And the signal is that everybody that works in the Valley indirectly or directly or indirectly makes money because of the tourist economy. That's how I think you mentioned that. So this is a defensive undertaking. In order, it's not expansionist, and I think people may view this as an expansionist type of pro-growth move by the county to increase its dominion over, you know, bigger facilities and whatnot. I mean, governments do like to grow. Notwithstanding, this is to keep what we have here intact. Because if we don't do this, then 30 years from now, you know, I mean, Aspen almost went out of business after the silver ran out. You know, it could go out of business again.
Yeah.
Because it's really difficult to get here.
And that's a great transition into our vision conversation. I want to make sure we get through everybody. So, Scott, did you have a quick comment?
I didn't know.
I just want to cue us on.
I haven't heard from the architect and the domestique.
The first one I put up there was the ease of use and accessibility of the building, because I think it's really important that people could. What's wonderful about the current airport, even if it's overcrowded and outdated, is you can park your car, you can walk 50 feet, you can go through security quickly, people are friendly, you can get to your gate, you do your check-in, and you get on the plane, walk out on the tarmac, and you're gone. That just kills me, you know? You can't do that at LAX or New York or anywhere.
It's the weather problem.
It's just so wonderful. I think that's just real important. That little character thing that is so, and besides, you get off the plane and you're here. So,
yeah, I've heard the term ski and ski out airport a few times in this process.
I like that, yeah.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the architecture, yes, what you described should be an outstanding building. It should be, I think climate change has to be in the conversation. Because, like it or not, I think that's happening and it needs to be resource efficient and energy efficient and everything else. If we're going to build the right kind of building. And yeah, it's going to be expensive, but it is all buildings like this are expensive.
For 50 years, it'll look cheap 20 years from now.
And we don't want that. Just the laid-back, sort of friendly atmosphere, I think we had to keep that. I think that's just invaluable. That I don't know how you build that into the airport, but there's something really special about this place, and that needs to be reflected the minute you get off the plane and you walk through the terminal.
Great. And Monroe?
My vision is kind of inartistic, like a lot of people in here, but there's a lot of people in here who have talked about ease of use, and without including my Mayo Jean contender here. And I think that's really key. We moved here a little less than 2 years ago from a town that was in the throes of discussing whether it should have a new airport, and whether the passenger experience was good there, and whether there were enough shops there, and enough places to eat. And I kept grumbling to her, I just want to get on the plane and get off the plane as easily as possible.
Right.
I
agree. I put noise because I have to. I don't think that we have a lot to say about that, though, as a community member. And then I pretty much agree with everybody who's been talking about the experience. And I think if I had a magic wand, I think it would be, a wonderful experience where you go in, you don't have to wait in line for an hour and, be there 2 hours ahead, even though they say you should. You don't really have to. And I think that I know someone that works at the airport and the terminal, I mean, I guess the building is just terrible just really bad, like no shower, for the employees. I heard a story about how someone had chemicals on them from the ice, de-icer, and didn't have a shower to. So anyways, that experience for the employees, but also for the people traveling, of course. And then ideally, I think it would be great if the county and the city could work on transportation, where there's either, I know that light rail has been mentioned in the past. I don't know if that's even on the docket at this point, but just thinking about getting from the airport to town easily and safely and maybe without cars.
That's a really good point, but I want to make sure we document here. And then, the connection to the Velociraptor system and that mechanism. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the overall mobility, that it's not just, air service, but overall mobility and how we move around in the valley.
Yeah.
Great point. Elijah.
Okay. So the first thing I said was environment. Both, I really think we need to keep it being efficient in mind with, our entire economy revolves around the environment, so we should, try to help that. But also the environment with, noise and keeping the same kind of Aspen environment feeling that we have currently. The second thing I said is trying to, bring fuel prices down and things like that for general aviation pilots, because I think it's important to, we have a great training program, but if we can get young pilots flying out of this airport, I think it could also help advertise bringing more pilots to this airport and flying into this airport. And then I also said economy, which we need to try to build it in a way that it can be flexible in the future and make sure that we're always trying to get people in here, because our economy really does revolve around tourism, which revolves around the airport and ease of use and getting in here. So,
excellent. So now that we've heard from everybody, I was going
to
say,
Could I mention one thing to Kate? And I think that the community should also be aware of this, and that's noise. Noise with these jets is really created by two things, mechanical noise and the rush of air through the nacelles that contain the engine. And the new engines that these smaller, narrow-body aircraft use, they're called high-bypass engines, where it allows much more air to go through the engine, which creates much less physical disturbance in the air. I know it sounds a little counterintuitive, but it's true. And they are as quiet as these old, CRJ-700s, which fly in and out. Is that right?
It is right, yeah.
So bigger doesn't mean louder. And I think the public really needs to know that, because, technology is not static. They also happen to be much more fuel efficient.
But there's also the private base operation when not all those planes are going to be quiet like that.
Well, we should, if we, this is going to be a very expensive project to build, you know, and I doubt the FAA is going to finance the same amount toward the airport that the Interstate Highway Act mandates them to build a road, you know, which is usually 90%. I don't think we're going to get anything close to that. So that means you have to be very creative in how you're going to finance this. So with respect to private aviation, Aspen should tax these loud private aircraft, which basically is you tax them on weight and noise, you know, so that pilots like our fellow committee member, focus committee member, perhaps he's going to be flying in lighter weight aircraft. He doesn't pay much in terms of an airport takeoff and landing fee. But, you know, somebody who's flying an old private jet with, you know, really loud loud engines, should tax the crap out of that guy.
Excuse me, those are prohibited now in Aspen.
They are?
Yeah, okay. The state, I'm trying to remember, it's stage one, thing like the old Lear jets, the old Gulfstreams, that prohibits it.
But what about stage, even stage two jets are probably allowed.
There's an exemption.
I think stage two as well.
I don't think you can buy stage two.
There's an exemption for air ambulance and military flights. Right. So if you hear, you know,
yeah,
it could be military.
But we're not worried about it. But those, but.
And that would be a good comment to pick back up on, too, on May 7th when we're talking about industry trends and what the airlines are doing, what the manufacturers are doing, and how those industry trends are translating to what our vision for the airport
but
is.
Two-thirds of our takeoff and landings are not commercial flights. It's private, it's general aviation.
So just to go back to your point, if you have a larger airline, that's less noise because, of course, you know, if you have 100 people on an airplane instead of 50,
right.
The
noise per person, per passenger, is lower. Which means fewer scheduled takeoffs and landings. And it's very interesting. There's a projection that you guys have on the county website, which projects out what the takeoffs and landings will be. And if you look out 8 or 10 years from now, with the airport built, you will see fewer takeoffs and landings than what you would imagine for 2019 because of it anticipates larger aircraft with more people.
And that's one of those things on May 7th when we're looking at trends. To look at trends, you really need to know what the baseline is, too. So, you know, starting with a lot of that, you know, what's happening today so we can know what the trends might be for the future and the projections are.
Excuse me, one quick point. Atlantic Aviation provides free fuel for the flight program here.
But then when you're not flying with the flight program.
Right, that's only for flight training. Yeah. So, but that's just an initiative by Atlantic Aviation. It's not something, it'd be nice if Picken County could kind of make that part of the lease. That the FBO provides free fuel for the flight train.
But you've made the point before, I think, that if there were competition for the private, there's just the one, right?
Yes.
In terms of FBO.
Right.
I mean, they would be good to have the ability to have another one because competition would bring those prices down. But I think you said that there's something in the paperwork, the environmental thing, that there's not room for it. Is that
well? When the original projection had two, one on the Owl Creek side and the second on the Owl Creek side. And then when everybody realized that the current airport isn't viable anymore for lots of reasons, they had to go through the widening of the runway to get wingspans that are greater than 100 feet because all these smaller narrow bodies, they're all greater. Even the smallest of the new narrow bodies is 97.95 feet 7 inches. That's the Mitsubishi. You can't fly it. So, and then you have the runway taxiway separation, which has to increase to 400 feet. So that expansion into the Owl Creek blew away the second FBO, which I agree should be a secondary priority. But there's not enough real estate to do that, unless you basically move long-term parking and short-term parking and the car rentals offset. And then maybe you can free up enough tarmac and real estate for a structure to have a second FBO. there's a lot of interesting aspects to that.
And that constrained site, I think, you know, really translates into the vision for the future of this airport, because it is a very constrained site. Mm-hmm. And right. Maybe with 45 minutes left in our time here, I want to make sure we all hear, really, given the values that we've talked about, how does this conversation translate into our vision? And I think we're really going there already. So is it okay to start off? Maybe we'll go back.
Can I do my vision? Because it sort of ties into...
Sure, we can start with you, Evan. That's
because
great.
It just sort of ties into this this particular point.
We have one more member.
Perfect. Great.
I personally would like to see... you asked for 3 points. They are to have the airlines and the county invest in aircraft and navigational aids, which widen the permissible takeoff and landings, the weather envelope for permissible takeoffs and landings, in an effort to make Aspen. You know, it'll never be an all-weather airport, but as all-weather as it can be in a box canyon at 8,000 feet.
But how do you do that?
Well, between additional navigational aids and larger aircraft that are probably a little more stable, you know, we're probably maxed out at 8,000 feet. You probably can do that a little, so that the wind could be a little bit, can blow a little more, and maybe the visibility with navigational aids, there's more ILS, you know, maybe. I'm not a pilot. You could apply to that. But that would be one priority for me in terms of vision. Second would be I'd like to see flights to the East Coast, New York in particular. I go there every other... I will be going there at least every other month when I move here. The third thing is a second FBO, which we were just talking about. And I think that if we integrated RAFTA into the planning to have to require parking, long-term parking, at, let's say, the intercept lot, I think you get rid of the long-term parking lot. The airport owns property across the street around the NDC. Short-term parking can be there, and that could be like a cell phone lot. I mean, you fly around the country, there's cell phone lots all over the place.
Cell phone
lots. That could be the short-term parking. Okay, and if you move the rental car also to intercept, you know, you can free up a lot of real estate to build that second FBO, which is another, you know, you look at it as a cost. I look at it as a revenue stream.
What's the benefit of the second FBO?
I think that it'll lower costs, and it'll create some competition, which the county can, in a very mercenary way, take advantage of, because it'll bring more private aviation here, and you can split part of the cost by charging more fees to general aviation, which will help with the financing to get the airport built. And if you integrate mass transit, there's probably other federal funds that you could use, tap into from the Department of Transportation, to help build the airport.
Excellent. Thanks, Evan. And I know Jarrett was getting set up. So we had new aircraft navigation technology to make it more of an all-weather airport, improved reliability, the second FBO, and then more direct flights and the flights.
To the East Coast.
Yeah. And he gave us three. It doesn't have to be three for your vision. Use your three values to kind of bubble up what your vision is. If it's three things, great. If it's one big vision, that's great, too. We'll try to keep it 60, 90 seconds. And yeah, we've got a new member joining us, so I want to make sure we have a chance to introduce. And what's your name, ma'am?
My name is Sue Tatum. I live in the Gant condominiums. I've lived there for 21 years. I was a biology professor, and here I'm a local artist. And if you recognize me at all, it's because I ran and lost for city council a couple years ago. So I've traveled a lot, so that's why I was interested in the airport. And I had done the homework that they sent us on the list. So,
oh, excellent. So, well, we were just transitioning into the vision, but if you've got your three values, and we'll just stick them up on the wall for you as you go, if you want to talk through them.
Oh, you want to talk through them, or you want to?
Yeah, if you want to talk through them, I'll just put them up as we go. If you've got your,
I'll bet you have some of the same ones they did over there. In all my traveling, which is probably four or five times a year since I was 5 years old, and I'm 74 now. So I've been around the world, actually, with National Geographic. We have the fastest in-and-out airport I've ever been to.
Convenience was a big one. So
convenience is a big one. And with the damp guests, the speed of getting in and out of the airport, which is facilitated by the van system, the hotel van system greatly, is very, very welcome. Flexibility. I thought of flexibility because in the time that I've been here, they had to chop up the airport to make room for TSA. So I guess you have to look down the road and whatever we do or ever that is done allows for changes in the future that can't even be predicted. They like that the airport is small, which goes together with the fast in and out, and that it's regional. And that it says Aspen. And they want to keep, everybody I know wants to keep that flavor. The only complaints I've heard actually are about the TV screens. that's my list.
And
less
Susan, so you know too, the small unique flavor really fit in with one of our themes about, you know, retaining that community character and that uniqueness that has Aspen. Convenience and flexibility also within our broader theme. So going forward, we were just starting to go around the horn.
Thank
and in about
lot.
60 seconds, how these values translate into our vision. And to let you digest a little bit, Andrew, I'm going to start with you, and then we'll kind of move clockwise through the room for vision.
It's somewhat similar to what I said before. It's I love the in and out. It's easy. I love sort of just big enough. How we define that, I think that's part of this, our work is finding what is just big enough. And then obviously, I do not want to lose commercial air service. So that's a part. That's more important to me than shutting the gates to the valley.
Yeah, and so the vision statement would be a right-sized, efficient, and effective airport that maintains a good level of service. Excellent. Cool. Great. Thank you. And Brent?
That's Tom.
Oh, Tom, sorry.
My concern is somebody else mentioned the length of time for the vision. I mean, I think in this day and age, to look forward 30 years with the technological advances that are being made, and it just doesn't seem practical. So I think the planning should be in a more realistic time frame to, you know, not go 30 years down the line. I mean, 30s, you know, things, you know, the types that we're talking about, different types of planes, they're going to change. Mm-hmm. All the technology is going to change way more rapidly than in 30 years.
Yeah, so bringing it back to, you know, what we can forecast.
It's not a realistic number, but you can still make the terminal more functional and consumer friendly, and eliminate some of the wrinkles that are in the existing building right now by having a new building.
Thank you, Tom.
That's one of the things that that you try to balance. To your point, is that the community will expect if we're going to put a lot of money into it, we come out and it wasn't thought out, you know, into the future. They criticize us for that, that we just didn't think far enough out. So there's a balance in
the
financial side. You're right.
Yeah.
But not yesterday. That's
sure.
The point we've got to stay away
certainly
from.
Certainly.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it brings us back to the 30-year comment, you know, what's the right number?
Yeah. Yeah.
But Rich said seven. 5 to 7.
5 to 7 when we
well,
want to get started.
That's just
how
we
build.
So obviously it's going to have to go.
Right. But technology is amazing in this field. We hear testing electric planes.
But it needs to be built in such a way that it can accommodate new
technology,
and not be static as far as, you know,
exactly.
not so inflexible that it can't times when they come.
Yeah. And Tom, what I heard too is that balance, you know, making sure we're forward thinking enough, but realistic, still and practical in our planning.
Mm-hmm. Net zero, being economically friendly to the
environment.
Thank you. But I, you know, obviously it needs to get balanced out because it's a little expensive, but it's the value that needs to be on that board.
Yeah, great. Excellent.
My point is maintaining airline service, improving it for the future, not limiting ourselves to Regionjet, which will be retired, not limiting ourselves to an airline which will be scrambling for pilots, but to go beyond the wingspan limit and the landing weight limit.
Excellent. Thanks, John. Heather?
I guess I kind of agree with everybody else, not to be a copycat, but at some point you run out of ideas, but I think my understanding of what the focus group is supposed to do ultimately is to use some of the ideas that come out of the other groups, and I think that we have to really be cognizant of the perspective in this valley, whatever end of it you're in, that there's sort of the anti-growth and the growth, and I think your point that bringing in new airlines, bigger planes, more efficient planes isn't necessarily some kind of big community conspiracy to create massive growth that's going to turn us into Vail or Los Angeles or whatever. There's some kind of your statement about a right size, and there. I haven't been to Jackson Hole, but that's interesting that you think that that airport is efficient and maybe a little too big for us, but it's a place that has grown quickly and a lot like us after we did. So that would be interesting to study that or understand what they've done correctly there and maybe not correctly. But I think there just has to be a real sense of what is the right size. I think that external transportation to and from the airport, where people park. I mean, that is a horrible situation there. There's never enough parking. You're running late to grab your plane, and you've got to find a place to park. And so maybe moving it somewhere else, but making it easy for people to get there is important. And then if that also frees up a place to put the second FBO, I think that that makes a lot of sense. So I just think that there's so much to the design and to the expansion, not in the sense of making it some massive thing that's going to being sitting there that works is such an important balance, and balance is such a trite word, but it really does come down to figuring out how those needs are met, not just in 7 years, but in 27 years or whatever, so that even if it's not right then and there now, it can still accommodate that later. And thinking ahead to things like competition with another FBO and where the parking is going to be and if that parking can grow if it needs to, and also having the airlines come in that can continue getting the right kind of pilots and all that. It's just really important to look at that much broader picture, but not make it seem like it's just growth for growth's sake.
Excellent. Thank you.
Someone brought up light rail. I'm a proponent, the less cars we have, the better. We have a no-idle law in Aspen, and we've all seen this, particularly in the winter and in the summer when it gets 80 degrees here. People have their cars running while they're getting their children ready to ski, or they're getting things out of the car, going to the airport. You know, maybe we could, this light rail thing, or this some type of transportation that people don't need to be obliged, particularly in the winter months, to rent a car. That because we have shuttle service to all the mountains anyway, and somehow make it easier for our guests not to have to use a car. And what a wonderful experience. You know, we spent 2 weeks in Switzerland and didn't use a car once. It was fabulous.
Yeah, and that's a good thing. We're hearing about the importance of ground transportation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I just want to expound on the flexibility suggestion, because in designing the building and the facility, you can always design with the future in mind. And that's for technology, and it's for physical space changes. When airlines shrink or grow, or you need to add onto the building, they just need to allow flexibility to grow and shrink, because that's always happening. But also security, what I've seen in airports in the last 30, 40 years is security has changed completely, and that is every airport has had to shoehorn in the security things and usually just screws everything up. And I mean, Aspen, it's not that bad, I don't think, but surely there will be more security changes as the years go by. We see something happen every year. So you just have to build in flexibility to be able to make changes in the future for that kind of thing.
That's a great point, and I think we're hearing that from you too, between right-sizing and making sure that we're flexible and agile enough to really evolve with technology and needs and demands as it goes. Great.
Thank you, Jean.
I mean, even in the remote part of the world that she and I live in, we have a neighbor who now works 16 hours a day at the airport, running people off who have parked and just stay there in the back end deals. And they are, he is, to say the least, rudely treated often. And that goes to the whole transportation, the ground transportation thing. But secondly, I'd also say that light rail is always sexy, always neat looking, and always expensive as hell.
Yep.
You can put things on tires, and if they're running efficiently, they can do things for a lot less money and move a lot more places.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very well said. Yeah, the importance of mobility. Okay.
I think efficiency and functionality are the two things that I would put my vision, and literally my vision would be in 30 years to fly in and out of Aspen primarily without having to drive to Denver or Eagle or whatever. Most of the time I'm going to the East Coast, so Denver. And then I want, you know, get off the plane, see a beautiful airport, walk in, pick up bags, and find my car either on foot like we do now or take some sort of efficient vehicle to get to my car, drive home, or take the efficiency, you know, take the light rail or the bus or whatever home. Because I do think that that's a huge part of the discussion with the airport expansion or remodeling or whatever we're talking about. But.
Elijah. So, yeah, there's all these like kind of things I was talking about that I want, like a second FBO and stuff like that. But I think, as you were saying, it's easy to like look and plan for 7 to 8 years in the future. And, you know, we kind of know what technology is going to do, but we don't know what it's going to do 30 years from now. And there's no way we can possibly plan for 30 years from now. So I think it's important just to like make sure that we are flexible and that when that random, you know, new piece of technology comes at us, that the airport can easily adapt to that new piece of technology rather than just thinking about the technology that we want to accommodate now. So, yeah, just flexibility.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The future-proofing thing, you know, it's impossible to forecast, but, you know, being agile enough to try to adapt.
Yeah.
Cool. So,
Barry.
Let me just say, parenthetically, I don't have an issue with a 30-year vision, trying to come up with a 30-year vision. It's going to be, the further out you get, the less granular it's going to be, and the more abstract it's going to be, the more conceptual. But, I mean, even in Aspen, people still want to get value for money, and we're spending $400 million is like the rough penciled-in budget. And on the one hand, that's maybe only 20 or 30 high-end homes, the cost of that. But on the other hand, it's we want the thing to last more than 5 or 6 years, and we want it to last more than 30 years. So I don't have a problem with that in terms of like you asking us to see if we come up with anything that makes sense. My weak effort goes like this. My Aspen Airport of 2049, when I'm 99, has a 25-year-old terminal who still handles peak demand, summer and winter, without a leaky roof and with adequate parking structures. I like parking structures. Baggage handling, customer service, security, waiting areas, and all the rest. It's all efficient. And there's unnecessary aggravation. Like people have been saying that the great thing is you get out of the car and you're on the plane so fast, it's amazing. It doesn't seem to happen anywhere else, and that's beautiful to the extent you can keep that and still have security. Why not? On the air side, the gates, the ramps, the taxiways, and the runway, they're as efficient and safe as possible with capacity sufficient to meet demand. And the only constraint being weather, precision approach technology, and departure arrival coordination limits, which we're going to learn about more
next week.
7th.
Yeah.
At the same time, the airport's a good neighbor by having constructed appropriate noise attenuation berms and walls and blast fences, and by implementing noise mitigation protocols such as, for example, restricting unnecessary APU usage at the 1FBO and maybe on the commercial ramp, and by interfacing the airport land side to the highest standard with private and public transportation systems. Whether they're all tires, or whether there's a little bit of light rail, but you've got one, you've got private transportation, and then you've got public transportation, whatever mode it is, there needs to be an integration there to optimize the airport.
Excellent.
Can we put all of our three dots on his and be done?
And we're going to come back to the values of
dots.
Yeah, some teams there, absolutely. Yeah, you can just stick it right up here.
Exactly. Yeah, the whole paragraph with the berm and the noise mitigation, I'm going to take that one. Mm-hmm. That's beautiful. In 30 years, I hope we live in a world where we don't need TSA.
and we could just walk right onto the airplane. You know, we could leave our car at the curb. We don't have TSA bothering us. That's my dream in 30 years. Just leave my car like I did 6 years ago, go in when I need to, and come back out, and
it's still
the keys in it, and I'll be able to drive away. I think everything I would want to say is up there. But maybe rephrasing. One of the things, there's a lot of things that work about our current airport, and I hope in this process we respect what works about it, meaning breezing through. I mean, I live literally across the street. I walk over there, and I know exactly how long it takes.
Thanks.
I know exactly, you know, I walk through the gates, and I know exactly. It's just, it's great. Whoever said they breeze through it, I do. You know, and there's certain times when it's busy, but there are a lot of things that really work about it, and that might be a good list to make and keep in mind when we make our vision.
Yeah, don't throw the baby out of the bathwater.
Exactly.
But if it broke, don't fix it. Yeah.
You know, most of everything's been said is pretty much, you know, it's sort of now we're starting to, I think, I would repeat what a lot of people have already said. I think just the one thing would be not to, I think a lot of the values could be absorbed in, and not so everyone's not afraid of bigger airplanes, because you'd be fewer airlines, fewer, you know, better, less noise, less fuel, and everything by allowing maybe bigger airplanes. But there is the whole, everyone has the 737 thing that just seems that everybody's shocked, everybody's running around, 737s are coming. It's like, you know, it's like aliens are coming or something. that one landed, you know, out there, and everybody took pictures of
it. Right. It was in the paper, and it was actually one of those older models too, I think.
It was, yeah. Right. I just think our values can be accomplished if people won't be scared of bigger planes, which could mean fewer flights and environmentally better and less noise, because everything's getting quieter.
Right. Right. Like we
could I ask the group a question?
Yeah.
Do you think people are, your neighbors, you yourself, you know, have a lot of anxiety over 737s?
I think there's a real misconception about it, just like you said, that bigger or newer or whatever is bad.
Yeah.
It's nostalgia.
It's just bad.
It's tribal nostalgia, because the great fight was fought 20 years ago when Hunter Thompson was still alive. Right. People felt good about it. And at that point in time, maybe it made sense.
Right.
Now, my personal hobby horse is it's time to move on from that.
Mm-hmm. I don't think it's necessarily nostalgia. Like, I would consider myself in the skeptical camp of, like, everybody's saying it's quieter, and I believe that the newer ones probably are more efficient for fuel and noise. But, you know, show me. Prove it.
We've talked about,
that's kind of my thought,
about that down the road is a demonstration, is actually bringing one in. For the group to see.
I think there are two issues regarding safety. One is that, as I mentioned before, as you mentioned, you know, you have many pilots that are flying these RJs are underpaid, and they probably have a lot less experience than you do. And I personally would rather have you flying a new, smaller, narrow body than, you know, one of your colleagues that works for SkyWest flying a CRG.
Are you saying some of the guys in the left seat of those CRJs aren't ATPs?
You know, I'm just saying that they have a lot less experience than you do. And they don't get paid. I mean, they really, they're on minimum wage. They literally are on minimum wage. So you have
$1,500.
Just the group for
But how many thousands of hours do you have?
Right.
20,000 hours versus 1,500 minimum.
Airline transport pilot minimum of 15,000 hours.
1,500.
Okay, but what you're getting with the larger aircraft is probably pilots that have much more experience. You distill that comment a little further, what I'm saying is that you probably have a potentially unsafe condition now with these smaller aircraft because of the relative inexperience of regional jet aircraft, because they're not flying for the big boys. That's not a United aircraft.
That's a different point. We were talking about the noise part. So, I mean, I feel like that's great. And I want everything. Safety is
the top. Like, none of us have said we want less safety. But I think just in general, I'm here to represent people who live in the flight path. Mm-hmm. If the, you know, if the planes are more quiet and there are a few of them flying in, that's great, but that's all stuff that we're just saying right now.
Here's a friend of mine's comment about 737 specifically, whose opinion was regarded highly enough that he's on the airport vision committee, like the top one, is they're going to have four of those things lined up. They're all going to get up once. The traffic's going to be horrible. And by the way, it's all a ruse for bigger growth.
What, somebody said that.
A ruse for what?
This is one of the guys
so
on the big committee.
This is to
committee.
Answer your question. This is what
no, this
saying.
Is. This is the, we don't see that opinion represented in the room, but there's someone, there are more than one opinion on the top committee for this
right.
whole process.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We're saying
we've heard
737s will crush our traffic. They're going to be noisy. They're going to be, you know, it's going to be all about more growth, and this is big business, and this is someone who services resort-based people. And he's older, and he's just like, look, I don't want 737s. I don't care. I'd rather not have commercial service than have 737s.
And I think keep in mind that even though he's on that committee, the nice thing about this is we've got all the input here that we're taking all these opinions, we've got values, and so that one opinion isn't going to carry the day.
Oh, when someone asks
but
who
right.
thinks that,
well, more
like,
than
this,
one
is, this is why I got involved.
That.
It's a very close friend of mine,
well.
And we have a big difference of opinion.
Yeah. And that's the benefit of the really terrific community response we got to the being on the airport advisory groups is there is a lot of diversity of opinion, and I think that's why the Airport Vision Committee really wanted to have the values-based conversation now so we could get what's most important to us out on the table, and that could inform as we're looking at industry trends. What do we want to do locally?
Yeah.
So it's a very.
I need to go pick up my kids. So do I just stick my dots?
Yeah,
somewhere?
If you want to stick them on your key values, yeah, please.
My earlier comment about 737s was: are people flipping out because of the two recent crashes? Because. Because I think that there is.
It was just the concept.
The 737. Is probably now a safe aircraft. However, it's completely questionable whether or not that aircraft, irrespective of the problems that Lion Air and Ethiopia have had, are going to be permitted to fly into this airport, because you need to get additional waivers of certain certifications.
Thank you.
But that doesn't mean that other large aircraft should be denied. Coming into the airport.
Don't need to go all the way to the size of a 737. We can look at the Airbus A220.
The A220, the new Amber Airs.
We don't need to supersize the airport to the largest possible airport.
Right. I mean, even the A318s and 19s.
Yeah.
And bring it back to
Kate's point, too, about the noise and the emissions, and looking at industry trends, actually next week when we've got those experts there to look at what's happening. These are great questions to be asking about the safety, about the emissions, about the noise, and what we can expect as we look at some of these changing aircraft designs. And really, the 737 we're kind of hearing, from our FAA guy, too, was not really necessarily the right question. It's really what facilities on the ground can meter some of that kind of growth, and looking at where technology plays and that kind of thing. Is that more where you were going?
Yeah.
Okay. Amos, I know you've been waiting on a question.
Another big meter is Highway 82. I mean, the airport's only serviced by one road, four lanes, and that's it. So, it can only get so big.
If you look at current congestion, it's a problem today, and how we, be visionary and look at the future. Elijah.
When you asked the question about what people have been thinking about bigger aircraft, one of the things, the immediate thing that I've heard from people when they've heard that is like, the minute we get bigger aircraft, there's going to be just like a huge amount of people coming in. There's going to be a lot more flights. And when we have bigger aircraft, there's obviously going to be more routes because you can fly from farther away. But I also feel like that on some level will be balanced out by having a larger aircraft and having more people for flight.
Correct.
So if the current routes, we're flying half the flights because we have...
Well, the projections actually have takeoffs and landings dropping because you'll have the same number of employments, but with fewer aircraft.
Yeah.
And I think because of the pilot training and because of the quality and the type of aircraft, they'll be more fuel efficient and safer.
Do you think during the off seasons they'll continue flying in and out? Because I know it drops off a lot. I don't know the numbers, but
my impression over the last 10 years is that the off-season is becoming the on-season. Well, not these 2 months, but during the summer. Summer's just as busy.
But if there's competition,
summer's crazy.
A variety of airlines, they're going to have to, because they're going to have to meet each other's, and they intend to meet each other.
But I think that the limiting, someone said this, I don't know if it was our original orientation over in the library or it was here. Having fewer hotel rooms is a much bigger limitation than aircraft. People have to stay somewhere, and not everybody's like...
Right. Yeah, Barry.
Okay, so Barry, I think that's like a really critical point. You know, it's hard to get... I mean, John Sarp is here, and he's building the new W Hotel. That's the first hotel that's built in how long in Aspen? You know,
yeah, and... 1,700 beds in the last...
I didn't come up with the idea. I was quoting the head of the CEO down at Telluride, who used to be with Vail, and they had a seminar down there, and people like the folks who run up Sun Valley, they were down there saying, what is that, you know, what's the Icon Pass doing to your peak season, your peak
week? Well, a lot of those people are...
He said, we're limited by beds.
Exactly.
At the end of the day.
And I think this speaks to your point. You know, you've heard concerns that people are... agitated by an airport expansion that's going to bring in more people with larger aircraft, when that's not the gating issue for more tourists. The gating issue is how many beds do we have in the community? And we've lost 1,700 beds in the last 20 years, something like that?
Yeah.
I mean, unless everybody converts their bedrooms into like Airbnb, we're not going to get a lot more tourists because...
I think there's a fear of that.
A lot of that's
happening. Your rights, but it's, people are doing that. So I'm not saying that's a bad thing. It's just that comes into the conversation.
But the anti-development nature of Aspen zoning and planning board
is always going to...
And with 12 minutes left, I want to make sure we hear from our last two candidates.
As fun as this is, I hope... You know, Elijah and I don't have to do this again in 20 years. So I'm going to try and get...
Okay, the rest of us are really old.
What's your point? I just want to plan for flexibility down the road that if technology changes or the scale of Aspen changes, that the terminal is able to accommodate whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's really that... you know, kind of future-proofing, and this is a generational opportunity, so making sure that we think about it practically, but also...
And we're all putting in a lot of our time and effort. There's thousands of man-hours being put into this from a community effort standpoint, millions of dollars. Let's try and use it as efficiently and effectively as we can.
Yeah, well said. Sue, you want to bring us home with your vision for the airport?
The only thing I want to do is stick up for the regional pilots, I guess, because I have flown a lot. Mm-hmm. I've flown around the world. I've probably flown in all kinds of airplanes that I don't know the names of. And the smoothest landings are at Aspen's airport, and the safest ones. The only time I ever had to go around was once in Aspen. They went around for safety and made a safe landing. It was smooth. So I'll stick up for them.
Excuse me, I like that. They're great pilots. Unfortunately, we're losing them to the major airlines.
That's probably what happened.
There aren't any new pilots coming in before you got here.
He's
a pilot, a commercial pilot. So they're getting moved up to the bigger airlines.
We need more pilots. We do. We've got the next generation.
The regional pilots are barely getting paid. So they're like, why would I fly for regional airline if I can fly for bigger airlines? But then, you know, we have nobody to fly into our airport.
What are the bigger, so United would be a big airline?
Yeah, it's just SkyWest is what it has, like, United on it, but it's not United that's flying the airline, SkyWest.
It's not United.
Excuse me,
in case you didn't hear earlier, we talked about this scope clause. Any by airline contracts, anything greater than 76 seats or 86,000 pounds max landing weight has to be flown by a mainline aircraft. Which would be American, Delta,
which
United.
Would be a union, a union pilot.
Okay. Yes,
so think of
contractual.
Major airline pilots as union pilots versus non-union, which is SkyWest, you know, and you know, Trans Mountain, you know, these other airlines.
Is your pilot
from
Delta,
do you fly on
SkyWest? No, they get paid on SkyWest.
That's why United has SkyWest operating, because that way United doesn't have to pay them.
Right, and... those pilots only fly heavier, larger. Yeah.
Did you get your sticky dots? Kind of, or those two of those years?
I was going to give you some here. Did you get sticky dots?
So everybody still have their three dots.
Some now.
Excellent. So one of the fun parts, now that we've had this discussion, the audible out of the column, this exercise is put your dots up, but if you want to add something to your original value based on what you've heard tonight to round it out a little bit, feel free to add a little additional help. So put your dots on the values that are most important to you. You can put all three on the same value, or you can spread them out, disperse them, you can just stick them to various forehead like you're talking about here.
And again, whenever you're done with this, we're done for the evening. So you're free to go.